Okay, good morning everyone. I suppose you can hear me now. I already checked from Valeria that I can also hear you. So this time everything should be working okay. So let's continue in this lecture the discussion about the using of ARMA models in time series analysis. So we are still continuing the discussion about the univariate time series models. And as I already showed you yesterday, there's one brilliant book by Box and Jenkins and Reinsel and Leung, Greta Leung, that is actually covering these things very thoroughly. There are also lots of other books, like for example, that Hamilton, James Hamilton book, that are not listed in the list of books that are used in this course. So if you are interested about the theoretical statistical theory behind these models, then take a look at those books. They are brilliant. They have brilliant explanations about this statistical theory behind the building of these models. But in this course, we are more like using those from an applied econometrician's point of view. So the main thing here for the part of these so-called Box-Jenkins models, that is the other name for these ARMA models, is to do always the analysis using these three stages or three steps. The first one is the identification stage. What does that mean? It means that in some way or other, you try to somehow detect the relevant lack lengths or the lack structure of the model for both the AR model part and for also the MA model part. So yesterday we discussed about this in terms of using these graphical procedures, and that just simply means that we are using these partial autocorrelation and autocorrelation functions. So they give you an idea about the relevant lacks in the model. How many lacks? The main question to be answered in this stage is that how many lacks do you want to include? The second stage involves the estimation of these models. So it means that you are now either using the standard OLS regression model. If you have a model that is completely linear in parameters, so you don't basically have, for example, seasonal effects in your model at all, then you can estimate the model using the OLS procedure, OLS standard linear regression model procedure. It produces efficient parameter estimates for all the AR components and also for the MA components. The other alternative is to use the maximum likelihood estimation. And we will go shortly through the idea of maximum likelihood estimation in connection to the discussion about the ARCH and GARCH models when we start to model using parametric representations for the risk of, for example, funds market returns. So in that case, we are acknowledging that the model is right from the start. It's a non-linear representation of the data. So we are not able to use linear regression models. We have to use maximum likelihood estimation to estimate the parameter estimates. And the third stage is the model diagnostic checking. And usually this stage actually also involves the checking for the goodness of the model in terms of forecasting out of sample. So model diagnostic checking, first of all, means that you check for the white noiseness of the residuals from your ARMA model. So have you been able to capture all the relevant dynamics in the model based on the parameterization using AR part and MA part, or only AR part or only MA part? Nevertheless, the main idea is to be able to detect a model that has a well-behaving time series for the residuals from the model. So they should be white noise, basically. They are not allowed to be autocorrelated. Their error terms should be homostochastic. So there's no heteroscedasticity. This is one of the standard OLS regression assumptions also. And the mean and the variance should be constant. Actually, the mean should be approximately zero. So this is the part of model diagnostic checking. And by far the most important part regarding the residual behavior is that it should not contain correlation between the consecutive observations anymore. No autocorrelation in the residual series at all. In case you have been able to detect the best possible representation in the form of an ARMA model, stationary ARMA representation for the time series that you are considering, for example, S&P 500 returns, then the residual should be behaving very well. It should not be autocorrelated. It should have a constant variance. It should have an expected value of zero, or at least a constant, but preferably zero, actually. And the observations from lagged observations of that residual should not be correlated with the contemporaneous at the moment observations at any lag. That is the main idea. So step one involves determining the order of the model. Yesterday we used mostly graphical kind of procedures. Today I will go through also the estimation of those correlation functions, autocorrelation functions using RATs in this case, and in the demonstrations you will be using R and Stata. But nowadays a much more better procedure. You probably observed yesterday's lecture that the final decision can be more or less vague in terms of what is the relevant lag structure actually. What lag should you include to the AR part, and what lag should you include to the MA part? Or should it be a combination of AR and MA? So for example, 2 lags from AR part and 4 lags from MA part. So that was based on just taking a look at the partial autocorrelation, even though these functions for partial autocorrelations and autocorrelations, they give you a kind of a rule of thumb ideas on about the relevant lags in the model. They are by far not the best possible way to try to do this identification of the model. Nowadays, a much better procedures are available, and they are simply, all these procedures are basically based on the behavior of the residuals from an estimated ARMA model. Are the residuals behaving in an appropriate way in terms of the assumptions or relevant requirements for the white noise process? In step two, when you have got an idea about the best possible model, then do the estimation. Estimate the parameter estimates for the model, and you can use here, as I already mentioned, you can use here either a least squares if you have a linear model completely for the with respect to the parameters of the model, or use the maximum likelihood method depending on the model. The third step is this model checking. And originally, actually, Box and Jenkins in their 1970 version of that book actually suggested that it doesn't do a lot of harm if you start from an overfitted model. So you have way too much parameter estimates in the model. But actually, in the later stages of the editions, they also noticed that the more you have unnecessary parameter estimates in your model, the poorer are the out-of-sample forecasts of that model. So that is the main reason for why we always try to aim towards the most parsimonious representation of the data or the model. So try to get to a smallest possible model in terms of the number of parameter estimates to be estimated. Do this just based on using these residual diagnostics. Take a look at the behavior of residuals from each and every model that you try. And nowadays, we actually are using something else than just these autocorrelation functions or partial autocorrelation functions. And we nowadays want to build up a very parsimonious model. The simple reason for that is that the variance of the estimator matrix is inversely proportional to the number of the degrees of freedom. So the lower is that, the higher is the variance of the estimation. Degrees of freedom go lower and lower the more you have parameter estimates to be estimated from the data. Because by definition, degrees of freedom is equal to the number of observations minus the number of parameter estimates to be estimated from the model. So the higher, the larger is the model, the lower is the degrees of freedom, and the higher is the variance of estimators. So the equations that you are using to estimate the parameter estimates from the data. So models with which are profiligate might be inclined to fit to data specific features. So try to get to a most parsimonious possible model. So basically, this is the main reason. And this was something that Box and Jenkins, and actually when they took Greta Ljung as one of the writers to their book, started to emphasize more already from the second edition of their book. So that book that I showed you, it's a fifth edition already, but from the second edition onwards, the focus has been much more in using these information criteria. So they have two factors, a term which is a function of the residual sum of squares. So you have estimated the model, an ARMA model for your time series, you have obtained the series for the residuals. The things that are being unexplained, the value of the observations that is being unexplained by your model, sum the squared values of those residuals, so you are able to get the residual sum of squares. And these information criteria have been developed towards taking also into account these weaknesses or this inefficiency of large models in terms of out-of-sample forecasting performance of those models. So in the most recent versions of these information criteria, they have added some penalty functions to adding unnecessary parameter estimates to the model. So like in all kind of OLS or standard linear regression models based empirical analysis, we always try to aim towards the statistical significance of the parameter estimates. They should have a role to do in explaining the current observations of the time series that we are using. So for example, in an AR1 model, you have only one period lag values explaining the current observations of that same variable. So you should aim towards a situation where you have a statistically significantly different from zero parameter estimate in front of the series for the one period lagged observations. That is the main thing here. So we try to choose the number of parameters which minimizes the information criteria. The main reason for this aim to try to minimize the information criteria is that the lower is the residual sum of squares and sum of over all the observations, the lower is obviously the information criteria if we calculate that starting from the idea that the main thing here is always the value for the residual sum of squares. So the three most popular criteria are the Akaike information criteria, and this is actually something that the Box Jenkins also used in their first editions. Then in the next editions, Schwarz introduced this so-called Bayesian information criterion. And the main idea is here that you get to be introducing a penalty function here, that is the second part of here, that is related to the number of observations, but it's also even more importantly imposing a stricter, let's say, penalty to the unnecessary parameter estimates. So K is referring here to the number of parameters that you are estimating from the model. And this is the residual sum of squares, actually. So, and the final one here is the so-called Hannan-Quinn or Hannan-Rissanen. Actually, there's also one Finnish statistician that has been involved in the development of this last criteria. It also imposes this penalty, but it in a bit different form. So it's taking double logs actually here. In most cases, it's enough for you to use either the both the archaic information and Schwarz information criteria. Usually it's the case that the archaic information criteria is suggesting you a larger model. More lags to be included to your model compared to these two other guys. So K here is referring in each and every case here. K is referring to the number of AR parameters. So P here is referring to the number of AR parameters. For example, in an AR3 model, you have 3. P is equals 3. Q is referring to the number of MA parameters. For an ARMA 3, you have 3 Q parameters. And 1 is referring to the constant term. So it's including all the estimated parameter estimates. And in some cases, actually, you might get clearly different results whether you include the non-statistically important constant to the model or not. For example, in the demonstrations, you will have an example of the relevance of inclusion or exclusion, the constant term from the model. So nevertheless, in all these cases, we always try to minimize the value for this because it's based on this residual sum of squares idea, variance of the residuals, basically. So we want to have the case where the optimal number of AR parameters and Q parameters is the number of those that minimizes the effect of sum of residual sum of squares. So basically, I have got used to using only archaic and Schwarz because I have also, in many cases, tried this Hannan-Quinn, but it basically results in most cases to the same kind of implications than does the Schwarz or the Bayesian information criteria of sports Schwarz. So use these two, and sometimes you might end up into a situation that you have these kind of problematic partial autocorrelation and autocorrelation functions that we had the last example yesterday when we had the problem of unit root in the time series. We will be discussing about these thoroughly next week, but already here I would like to mention to you that basically nowadays when you start trying to fit an ARMA model to your time series, do first the unit root tests, because that gives you an idea whether you are at all able to estimate a linear ARMA model for your time series. Because if you have this unit root, then the partial autocorrelation and autocorrelation functions behave in an odd way, as you noted yesterday. So this is referring to the case when the coefficient on the first lagged observations in the AR1 model is not statistically different from 1. So it equals 1. And that is actually an indication of a unit root. So your time series is non-stationary. And the standard t-statistics and other behavioral assumptions behind the distributions of the parameter estimates or the standard errors of those parameter estimates, they do not hold in this case, actually. we'll be discussing about this thing next week. But in this case, obviously, you can estimate the ARMA model for the differenced values. An integrated autoregressive process is one with a characteristic root on the unit circle. So take a difference first from your time series and then apply exactly the same ideas than you would have applied for the levels if it would not have involved this problem of unit root. So typically researchers difference the variable as necessary and then build an ARMA model on those different variables. In some cases, we will be discussing about this next week very thoroughly. In some cases, it might be the case that your time series is upward sloping in an exponential way. So it's accelerating all the time. So the development is best captured as an exponential function. So in that case, it might even be the case that you have to take the difference two times. But also in that case, if you have very good reasons to believe that in your small sample period, it might be the case that, for example, the stock prices have been increasing in an exponential rate, then the returns might still be that are the log differences at the prices. The returns are the log differences at the prices. Then those might still be increasing continuously still in that time period. So you have to take even the difference of the log difference of the prices. So you have to take a difference of the returns still. So the returns might be an I1 series. They might be a unit root series. Still, if you want to use ARMA models for some reason or other, let's say like a benchmark for a model for your comparison of your forecast performance from some other model, for example. So you want to use an ARMA model, then just take a difference of the returns and then start doing this box Jenkins type analysis once again. Start from the identification and then do the estimation and then do the model diagnostics. An ARMA PQ model in the variable differenced D times is equivalent to an ARMA PDQ model on the original data. And in many cases, this finding or existence of the unit root in some time series, it's very much dependent on your sample size. The smaller is the sample size, the more likely you are actually going to be ending up into a situation that it might contain a unit root. If it's continuously trending upwards, then it might contain a unit root. Or if it's continuously trending downwards, the same thing here. So this is also one of the reasons why you would always try to use the biggest possible sample size, so that you would be able to sort of use periods of time when you have both upwards and downwards going trends in the time series. So it might be starting to look like a stationary series. So try to get the biggest possible amount of observations always for all your analysis. Then one very important thing in relation to these ARMA models and also to the multivariate extensions of these ARMA models that we will be discussing also next week, vector autoregressive models. One of the key things is always that they have been proved to be very good in forecasting. They are good models to forecast out of sample behavior or your time series. So an important test of the adequacy of the model is forecasting, for example, tomorrow's return on a particular share, like, for example, Nokia company share or stocks. Forecasting the price of a house given its characteristics, forecasting riskiness of a portfolio over the next year. And in this case, actually, you are now actually discussing perhaps about an AR Garch model, which means that you are using some kind of ARMA model to forecast the levels of the returns. the mean equation, but then you are also imposing the possibility that the residual series or the variance of that series might be behaving in a heteroscedastic way. So you have to capture that also using a GARCH model. And we will be discussing about these things also on week 4. Once again, about volatility forecasting, we could use also ARMA models with GARCH errors, basically. But in each and every time when we start to discuss about the second moments of the returns or the data generating process of the returns, then we are starting to discuss about riskiness or volatility. And the ARMA models are originally designed to model the mean values for the returns. So obviously in those cases, when you start to discuss about riskiness of the returns, you should obviously use perhaps some kind of variance model. And that is usually the GARCH models that we will be using. We can distinguish between two approaches. When we are discussing about this time series forecasting, it means that we are actually using kind of a structural models also, but the structure is completely based on the past history of the variable that we are trying to forecast. So we are parameterizing that past history, the effects of that past history, using our AR components and MA components, or a combination of those. And in many cases, these time series forecasting or these time series models are used as a benchmark for comparison when you are modeling the behavior of autosample behavior of your interesting variable in economic terms from your econometric model. So econometric structural forecasting means that you have an idea about the economic theory. So you have more than one variable that you are considering. So you have a set of explanatory variables on the right-hand side of your regression equation, and then you are interested about one individual variable on the left-hand side. For example, stock market returns. But you have an idea that perhaps for these stock market returns, also a relevant model might be a simple ARMA model. So you estimate your econometric structural model, do the autosample forecasts from those, and then compare those forecasts to a forecast that have been generated from a time series model using ARMA representation of the data. So this is applied to the left-hand side variable based on only taking into account its past history via the effect of AR terms and also the moving average terms. So, but still only for that individual one variable. So these have been proved. I can already say, based on my 25 years experience from using econometric forecasting models and individual univariate time series forecasting models, that these time series models, they are very hard to beat. Unless you have a very good, large, extensive structural econometric model that is based on a dynamic stochastic general equilibrium approach. So for example, for forecasting a, let's say, inflation series in Finnish economy, you have lots of information that has proved to be exogenous in the right-hand side. So you have lots of things there going on. You have interest rates from domestic markets, from foreign markets. You have nominal exchange rates. You have deviations of the productivity from its long-term average value, productivity of labor markets, and several other econometrically relevant or economically relevant variables on the right-hand side. You are just now making the forecasts using that model and then comparing those to the simple AR or ARMA model based forecasted values for that same variable, that inflation rate. So this is the idea here. And Sometimes it's very difficult actually to make a clear distinction between these two types of models, but usually in econometric structural or forecasting models, we have a valid economic theory or financial theory behind the use of those models. So these time series models are more like an ad hoc set of models. In the case of univariate model, we are just trying to detect the best possible parameterization for the dynamic effects. And in case of multivariate models, we are using these same ideas, AR or MA or ARMA modeling for a set of variables. Obviously, the set of variables gets to be chosen based on some kind of econometric or economic idea or financial theory idea about the relevant set of information that you should be focusing. We will be discussing about those next week. But the main idea here I've already mentioned several times this out-of-sample idea. The main idea in doing this out-of-sample forecasting exercises is that we expect the forecast of the model obviously to be good in sample. So that means that, for example, if we have a time series of stock returns for 10 years in monthly frequency, so we have the whole data here from starting of 1990 until the end of 1999. So the basic idea of testing for the out-of-sample performance of the model is that obviously we can estimate that model for a subsample that ends in December 1998. And then the rest of the observations of the axial series for these returns are being used to do the out-of-sample forecast comparison evaluation of our model. So based on this estimated model, we are able to produce forecasts one step ahead or multi-step ahead forecasts. So basically, if we are generating multi-step ahead forecast, then we are always using the one step ahead forecast as a replacement for the actual value, and then start doing the forecast for the next period, and then move onwards one period at a time and get the series of one period out of sample forecasts. So the forecasted values, we save that as an individual series, and then compare those observed observations to these generated forecasts from our model. And there are lots of measures to evaluate this performance. But the main idea in all these measures is that we should try to obviously get to the smallest possible measure for the difference between the forecasted values and the actual values in the evaluation period. So basically, this is actually one of the fundamental aims of ARMA and VAR models. And the comparison against econometric or structural models would be based that we estimate also for the same variable that we are interested, we can build up a model that is based on financial theory. Let's say, for example, capital asset pricing model, or in this case, for example, an APT model that refers to the modeling the excess returns of this portfolio against the risks from the macroeconomic variables. So estimate that model once again for this period of time, in sample period, and then generate the corresponding out-of-sample forecasts from that model and compare those forecasts to the forecasts from your ARMA model, just simply using the same measure for the forecast performance for both of these models. The lower is the measure for your forecast performance, the better is the model. So this is actually very relevant in terms of practical applications also in the markets. The market participants, financial analysts, for example, financial bankers or in banking firms try to forecast the future, near-term future development of these stock returns, for example. But in most cases, they use some kind of information from that firm, forecasted performance of that firm, for example, in terms of real performance, like what is the profits, what are the profits of the firm forecasted to be? Has it made any significant agreements or something like that? But in terms of just these technical forecasts or time series model forecasts, you can equally well try to forecast the near-term development of the returns based on just an ARMA model, for example. So we might be interested about this multi-step ahead versus single-step ahead forecasts. Usually we try to forecast the near-term performance of the stock market or the shares in the stock markets, for example. You can use recursive or rolling windows. So basically recursive means that your sample size is increasing all the time, that when you are doing the one-step ahead forecast, for example. So you estimate in this case, for example, when you are using recursive estimation, do the first forecast based on the sample that ends in December 1998. So if you're using recursive forecasting exercise, then do the next forecast. So the February 1999 forecast is based on the data that ends in January 1999. So the starting point here for the data stays the same, but the end point goes always one step forward. In case you are using rolling window, it means that you are using a fixed sample size. For example, this 9 year sample. So in that case, also the starting point always moves one step ahead and the ending point moves one step ahead. So the size of the estimation sample stays the same. In many cases, when you have clearly big structural changes in the time series, it can be actually quite relevant to use something else than just a fixed sample size. Recursive estimations or rolling windows might be relevant to be used also in some of the forecasting exercises. So to understand how to construct forecasts, we need the idea of conditional expectations. Conditional expectations. What is the conditioning information? In case of univariate time series models, this omega t here, conditioning information, is based on only the past history of this forecasted variable. So yt history of yd is the thing that we are using here in trying to formulate the forecast values for this yt. If it's a white noise process, it's completely impossible to forecast it. But if it's some kind of deterministic process, so you can fit an ARMA model, then it should be possible to forecast that. Actually, these efficient market hypothesis ideas are, for example, in some cases have been analyzed based on the idea that in efficient markets, basically it should be not possible to forecast the future values of some interest or some asset of interest, or for example, Nokia stock returns based on some other information. Because all the information should all be included into the formation of the price at the moment. So basically it should be the case that the returns are actually, if the efficient market hypothesis works, the return should be a white noise process. But we have proved that in many occasions that actually the efficient market hypothesis does not, in this very fundamental form, it does not work at all. There are lots of information that you can use for forecasting the future values of returns or prices from stocks. So there are two simple forecasting methods. The first one is the so-called naive forecast. So in that case, we are just assuming that the next period, the first forecasted value, is going to be exactly the same as has been the most previous observation, actually. The actual observation, YT. And that actually stays the same. So all the future values are exactly the same that is the last observed actual observation. So this is very naive assumption of no change. And this forecasting ability measure gets to be reported, for example, in R and also in WinRAT, not in startup by definition, but in R, for example, you get this so so-called tail statistics. So fail statistics is referring to these naive forecasts. But if you're comparing, it's a good, it gives you a basic idea whether your forecasting model is good or not. So if you compare your forecast to this naive model forecast, if your model is better, then the fail U statistics for your model should be below one. It's more efficient in trying to forecast the actual future values than is the standard very naive assumption that the next or the observed or the forecasted value is equaling the value that was the last actual observation. The other very simple sort of a reference point for forecasting ability of a model is to compare that against to the possibility that the forecasts are the long-term average of your actual series. This is almost the same thing than here, because also in this case, this is a constant term actually that you are comparing against, but this is now based on the sample average of your observations. Pretty much the same thing. So, when we are trying to do these forecasts, we try to derive these forecasts, we can have a structural model. Structural model here refers that you have a conditioning set of information. We discussed about this actually in the first week. Based on your theory, economic theory or financial theory, you have some kind of idea that, for example, the excess returns of Nokia firm, Nokia company, should be somehow in connection to, let's say, excess return from the market portfolio. So that would be the first explanatory variable. And then, for example, it should be somehow connected to the macro risks, like, for example, term spread or inflation expectations or inflation surprises, real productivity surprises, or something like that. So this is a structural model. It is not an ARMA model. It's based on an economic or financial theory. So basically, if you are using this kind of model for forecasting purposes, you should have some kind of, you should be able to forecast also the expected value for these real or these right-hand side variables. So actually, I already mentioned yesterday my dissertation, but actually I wanted to do analysis for example, interest yielding asset markets in the Finnish markets, liberalized Finnish financial markets during the period that started from 1989, when we liberalized the Finnish financial markets or interest yielding asset markets, and tried to do analysis for uncovered interest rate parity, whether it works or not. For that purpose, it was very relevant to and test actually for the Fisher hypothesis. The Fisher hypothesis was the first one that I was interested about, whether the nominal interest rate is in connection to inflation expectations. The reason for sacrificing almost 1 year in my PhD studies to generate a relevant series for inflation expectations was exactly this, that I was not satisfied to the available information about the inflation expectations that, for example, these research institutions and Bank of Finland were producing, because I had an idea that it might be actually more efficient to forecast those or to generate the expected series of inflation based on ARIMA model that captures various things that have been affecting to the actual inflation. So I generated the expectation series. So I used in the Fisher equation testing, I used that generated inflation expectation series to explain the nominal interest rate at the money market maturities. Huge work. You can obviously get much more, let's say, efficient use of your time in terms of researcher just by applying an ARMA model also to the interest rates. So the main question when you have decided to use a structural model and you would have to be using that for a forecasting purposes, Then obviously, if you have a condition, you set the variables there on the right-hand side, and the expected values of those are the relevant things that you want to be using. For example, in these APT, arbitrage pricing theory based stock market explanation models, it's actually the risk in the macro variables. So the deviation between, or the news in the macro variables, the deviation between the expected values and the actual observations, that is the relevant news factor that should have an effect on the returns. So you would obviously have to generate this expected series first for the right-hand side variables. And it can be a tedious job, actually. You can use ARMA models for each and every one. First of all, you would have to choose the relevant set of X information, then try to do separate ARMA models for each and every one. It can be a tedious job, actually. So the one of the main questions is that what are the expected values for these explanatory variables? The simplest possible assumption is that we can use the sample means for those. If you are using a rational expectations assumption with perfect foresight, then you just have to decide the relevant horizon. So let's decide that, for example, for monthly returns measured in annual terms, it should be actually the annual future development or the yearly future development of the real economy that is the relevant one. So take the actual future observation of that macro variable as the one that mimics the expected value. So we are now assuming very harshly that rational expectations with perfect foresight are holding for this variable. This assumption has been used in many cases, but in more sophisticated cases, some kind of expectations generating mechanism has been applied to this actual series. So it's a problematic thing. If you want to have expectations of some variables on the right-hand side, time series models are easy to use for this purpose. So these ARMA type models are very easy to use for this purpose because the current values of the series, it's modeled as a function only of its previous values and the current value of an error term. So this refers to the MA part and possibly previous values of the error term. So we can use ARIMA models, we can use simple unweighted averages, we can use exponential weighted averages. If it's important to capture also the effects of changing risk, so if you want to condition the current observations of returns also to the possibility that the variance of the returns might be changing over time, so it might be kind of a clustered thing that for certain subsamples the variance is higher and for some other subsamples the variance is lower. If it's important to capture that, then you have to use these GARCH models or threshold models. They are nonlinear models, and we will be discussing about those also in the later weeks. So basically, these are the possibilities that you can use for your forecasting purposes if you are willing to use some kind of benchmark models to be used for comparison against your structural economic model. So when you use ARMA models, it's very simple, actually. You don't have to build up these equations for the forecasting values because you just instruct the program nowadays to forecast. You just have to decide the in-sample period that you want to do the estimation first and then decide what are the out-of-sample observations for which you want to have the forecasted values generated from the model. So the forecasting model is typically used in this form. So in the longer term forecasts, S refers to the longer term forecasts that are, so S is starting from 1. Basically, in that case, we are always replacing the forecasted values. When we generate the, let's say, 12-month forecast, we are using the forecast for the first, second, 12, third, and so on, up until the 11th month forecast for generating the 12th month forecast when you're using this multi-step forecasting. Using this ARMA model for multi-step forecasting. So basically, you just have to remember that when you are using AR, MA, or ARMA models, the relevant thing that actually is affecting to the accuracy of your models is the length of the memory. So how long is the length of the memory in your model? For an ARMA 3.3 model, even though it's capturing the effects of the actual observations and the effects of moving averages over 3 months in monthly data, nevertheless, when you try to forecast the longer steps from fourth and fifth and sixth and seventh and so on observations, then the ARMA 3.3 model does not actually help you very much for those longer term forecasts. It's able to capture the effects of the behavior in the actual series only for the 3 periods of the past history. So when you are using this MA3 model, for example, it means that you are fitting to an actual data series, a model where you have a constant first, then the first lagged observations of UT, second and third lags. So when you start to construct the forecasts for future, all the relevant information gets to be used here already for the third forecast. So we are at time T and we want to forecast for the first, second and S steps ahead. So we know the actual values and the history of the actual observations, and we know the error term UT and the history of the UT terms from the first period. So when we start to construct the forecasts, so we are conditioning the future first step forecast here based on this MA3 model. So we can generate that. When we have estimated the model, we have the actual observation for this. We can lag the actual residuals 1 period and 2 periods and generate the forecast based on this. For the next period, if we are still using the same data set, then we have to remember now that it gets to be updated 1 period forward. So we actually have data only from the current observation and from the 1 period lagged observation of UT. When we generate using the same model, we want to generate the 3 period forward or the forthcoming observations forecasts, then we are actually ending up to a situation that we only have the observation from period T. So UT is only the only information that gives us an idea about the observation for the forecast values 3 periods ahead. So basically this updating equation now should give you an idea that basically after the third, if we have an MA3 model, after the third out-of-sample forecast value, actually all that we can use from our model is basically the constant term. And you will be seeing this, that actually the forecasts, the longer term forecasts without any updating the parameter estimates, for example. So you are not using recursive or rolling sample regressions, for example, generate a longer term forecast. This will actually, the longer term forecast will approach the mean value or the constant term of the representation of the model. So basically, this might not be very good, actually, but if the mean value gets to be estimated parametrically, it's statistically significant in the model, it might actually be fairly good approximation also for the longer term forecast values compared to some structural economic model, because it's capturing the overall sample mean in your series. When you use an AR model, basically the same idea applies here. You are constructing now So when you are using this, let's say we have estimated an AR2 model. So the starting point here is that you estimate the regression model that uses one period and two period lagged observations, actual observations. And then, so basically this should hold also for all the future values, but you have to remember here that for all the actual future values, always the length of the memory also when you're using an AR2 model is exactly the same. It's only two periods from the history. So when you are calculating these values for the future observations, you have the same constant term here always, but now for the first step value, you only have the observation from t and observation from t minus one that you can use because the length of the memory of this AR model is only two. The same applies to the two periods ahead actual values. Only the previous observation and the observation before that is available to you, and then all the rest remains to be unexplained. And the same applies to the three periods ahead forecast. So only the history, length of the history is always only two periods. So basically, when you try to do the forecasts, you are actually using the same. So you are formulating the expectations of the future observation. So replace this as an F variable. That is the forecasted value for the one step ahead, and that is the forecasted value for two steps ahead. So this is now resembling this. You are now replacing here the one step ahead forecast value to the value of UYT1 and using the actual information from T period. And then when you're constructing the three step ahead value, you are replacing this expected value, the YT1 T plus two, with the forecasted value from the previous step here. So this seems to be like a tedious job to do, but it is not very, it's not very difficult actually. And the programs do it for you. You don't have to do this manually in any step of your analysis. The program is doing that. Just instruct the program to do the forecasts. It will be using the estimated parameter estimates and the constant value for that. So we can immediately see that the longer term forecasts are also affected by always the previous forecast. So if these start to converge to a constant term, then also the forecast will start to converge to a constant term. So we can obviously generate also ARMA PQ models, but then in that case, we have to take into account that the parametric representation of the data is much more difficult. But we can obviously, if it's still a linear representation, we can obviously use this kind of calculation for those. You don't have to do those yourself. Machine is doing your, or the program is doing those for you. And if we want to compare now these forecast performances, this is the thing that you just have to understand, that what kind of measures for this forecast accuracy you can use. Just the basic idea is always here that you compare the forecasted values at certain steps ahead to the actual values. So FT S is compared to the YT plus S. So this is the realized value, and this is now denoting the S step ahead forecasts. So basically, if you are using this kind of mean squared error measure, then calculate all over all the observations that you are focusing on. For example, in that previous example, when we estimated the in-sample estimation until the end of 1998, and the forecast performance was supposed to be analyzed during the year 1999, so for 12 observation, so in this case, N is 12. You have actual observation from January, February, March, and so on from 1999, and you have now generated the forecasts for those same months. Calculate the difference between the actual observations and forecasts, square those, and sum over the 12 months. Divide that by 12, you get the mean squared error. Mean absolute error is basically the same thing, just calculate the absolute values. So the negative differences between the actual values and forecast values get to be treated exactly here also the same way. And they are also treated actually here the same way. But in this case, we are using the mean absolute errors. Mean absolute percentage error is basically the same thing, but it gives you a percentage value. So the lower, once again, is this also, the better is your forecast performance from your model. So this is in relative terms, just compared to the actual values from that same period. Compare the difference between the actual values minus the forecast divided by the actual values. So once again, if you are doing this comparison for the 1999 months, 12 months of 1999, then N is once again here, 12. So how can we test for other measures? Also, there's this percentage correct sign predictions that this is actually now a kind of a example of a constructed additional variable that you can construct based on your observations. So for example, if you have the exactly the same sign in the actual values than you have in the forecasted values. So if you multiply those together and you get the positive value from the multiplication of those figures, then you denote that to be one. So we are constructing here basically a kind of a dummy variable. Each and every time when the right sign goes to the right side in your forecasts compared to the actual ones. So basically, if you have a negative value for X, you have a negative value for forecast, then also this together, when you multiply negative with a negative, you get the positive. So this gets to be indicating that you have been forecasting the right sign. Then it also gets to be recorded as one in the dummy series. And in all the cases when you go wrong, you have a positive sign for the forecasted value, but the negative sign for the actual values, you are denoting that as a zero. So in also the case where you have vice versa, nevertheless, you are recording this as a zero. So you can calculate the percentage of right forecasts, right sign forecasts in this period. So given the following forecast and actual values, you can obviously calculate the mean squared errors, mean absolute errors, and percentage of correct sign predictions, for example. Do this as a home exercise. Do it there by yourself. And so obviously, the last one here is very easy to actually see that when you have the right sign, you have actually now here 5 observations, and out of those you have the signed right sign in the forecast you have here, and you have it here, but all the other ones go wrong. So basically 40% of the observations go right. You can calculate also the mean squared errors actually from this data. Also do that yourself just by using these equations that I have given to you here. So that is a nice exercise for you to do to get an idea about these things. So what factors are likely to lead to a good forecasting model? These are in general terms the things that you have to consider. A good forecasting model is actually one that the information, the conditioning information on the right-hand side model, whether it's an econometric structural model or if it's an AR model, an ARMA model, it should be capturing really the effects of changes in the right-hand side variable to the left-hand side variable. So it should be signaling something to the left-hand side variable. It should not be something that is just like an outlier type observation that you get to be capturing also. So you should be able to make a distinction between signal and noise. Noise is just something that actually does not have any kind of deterministic effect on the left-hand side variable. It just happens to be in the data at that point of time. So it's more or less something that you cannot explain in anyhow. Nevertheless, it's not forming, giving you a sort of a continuous dynamic information about the behavior of the left-hand side. Then the data mining issues are important. In some cases, you might be ending up to using those so-called generated variables or generated information sets. So you might be actually including some kind of simultaneity problem, for example, to your analysis. One example of this would be that you have to be always careful when you use, for example, the short-term interest rate to explain the real economic activity in the future together with the term spread, and using the same short-term interest rate to calculate the term spread. So this is an example of kind of a data mining thing here, but this is just actually based on the previous literature that it has been found actually that it might be the case that the short-term interest rate still has a separate role as an explanatory variable in a model where the term spread is also included to explain the real economic activity. So these data mining issues are very much case-specific things. You just have to be very careful in constructing the right-hand side variables to a model. Simple versus complex models. Try to avoid complex models. That's the simple instruction for this question. The more simple is the model, the usually better is its forecast performance. Then the final thing here is perhaps the most important. Even though we are discussing in the course quite a lot about these structural time series models, which means that we are focusing on only the history of the variables that we are constructing or we are using in the analysis, nevertheless, it's always important for you to mainly start your analysis from some kind of financial or economic theory, because that gives you an idea about the relevant information set, the conditioning information set on the right-hand side of your regression model. So the financial theory or economic theory gives you an idea that what should you have in your VR model, for example, when you're using a vector autoregressive analysis for your data. The theory gives you an idea about the relevant variables. So always start from taking a good look at the previous studies and taking a good look at the economic or financial theories behind your model. Then these discussions about statistical versus economic or financial loss functions. Statistical evaluation metrics may not be appropriate in all the cases. This is related to the taking into account that in time series analysis, especially, you might be having these unit root problems. We will be discussing about these next week much more thoroughly. Another very important thing here is how well does the forecast perform in doing the job we wanted it for? So is it actually relevant to even consider this kind of model for your analysis? It's always also a case-specific thing here, but nevertheless, you can calculate some kind of forecast performance measures for most of the models. Limits of the forecasting is actually very important here. What can and what cannot be forecasted? Basically, if we are using these statistical forecasting models that we are here actually focusing on in this course, they are essentially extrapolative. Extrapolative means that we are using basically the past history of the actual observations and some kind of measure for the moving average of those past observations. So they are kind of extrapolative. We are trying to extrapolate the future values based on the past history of the variable. Forecasting models are prone to break down around turning points. This is an important point. When you are focusing and you are using these kind of models to model the behavior of economic or financial time series, you have to be careful in acknowledging clearly economically significant turning points or breakpoints in the data. This actually gives reasons for using nonlinear models also. For example, when you are using an ARMA model for the monthly variables, if let's say stock market returns from the most recent data, then obviously this corona year is something that introduces clearly a breakpoint to all your data. So they might be subject to structural changes or regime changes or regime shifts. And in this case, if you are using, for example, data from the period of, let's say, 2002 to end of 2019, then I'm pretty sure that it's fairly difficult to use that data set using based on ARMA models to forecast the values of the 2020. So the simple reason for that is this completely unexpected corona crisis. And obviously we always also have this case that predictive accuracy usually declines with forecasting horizon. This should be obvious from that idea that I already presented here on how to calculate the out-of-sample forecast for longer steps. When the S increases, the forecasting horizon increases, we already observed that this is very much dependent on the lag structure of the model that you're using. Nevertheless, you just have to remember that forecasting is not a substitute for judgment. You always have to somehow be able to judge your final results based on the actual real life behavior. Are the forecasts relevant at all in terms of actual real life behavior? So if the forecast performance is bad based on the data that you use up until the end of 2019, if it's bad for 2020, the obvious reason for that is that we have experienced very unexceptional time during 2020. We have now updated all the data sets for the demonstrations, and you will get some clear ideas that how much did the things change during 2020, because we are now using data set up until December 2020 in some of the demonstrations. So you will get the clear idea about these possibilities of these models when something huge happens in the variables that you are considering, and it's a completely exogenous shock that happens to these variables. So I think now I would like you to take a look at the I will stop sharing this. I will return back to this and show you this practical example questions, but I stop sharing this now and then start sharing the output slide that is there. So can you see now these outputs from the estimations?
Yes.
Okay, so open these up from the Moodle page, take a look at these, all these things here that have been reported. And then, so this is the week two example for WinRAT's output. And take a look at all these things that are being reported there. There's a lots of models that have been estimated. And then try to somehow formulate some kind of answers or ideas about these questions that I have here. I will leave these here and let's have a 15 minutes break. My computer time is now 10:28. So, well, let's be back here 15 to 11 and let's continue the discussion. I will run the same results using the RATS program, and we will stop to discuss about these things when I run these codes. Okay, so be back here in 15 minutes. Okay, let's continue. Can you hear me? Yes. Okay, thanks. Could someone open up your microphone and sort of say something so that I can hear you too?
Yeah, we can hear you. Can you hear us?
Yeah, okay, good. Because we are, the idea is that we start to discuss about these things. I have not divided you to these breakout rooms because it's some kind of a hustle and we don't have too much time. So that if when I ask you something, just please open up your microphone and start talking if you have answers or ideas about these things. So here's the code that I am now using. I just started the WinRATS program from my screen, and then here I have in the upper window I have the code, and the idea is that in the lower window I will get all the results. So I have my data there in my screen, so I will read up now all the data, and I will just instruct the RATS that it's a monthly data set that starts from 1997. I read all the data in and then start doing the calculation of the variables. I first calculate the term spread variable to the euro area as a difference between the short-term interest rate and long-term interest rate, and then the same thing to the UK market. And then I calculate the log values for the economic policy or uncertainty things. We are not using actually those here, so it would not be absolutely necessary. And in this example, I'm just focusing on the 12-month horizon for the excess returns from the stock markets and 12-month real activity changes. So you can always add these explanations to what you are doing by just writing that after the stars or these asterisk signs here. So log of the euro stock prices is here, LSP, and excess return is simply the LSP minus the same value 12 months ago times 100 minus the short-term interest rate. The reason for using this times 100 is because this short-term euro interest rate is in percentage values already, so it's a monthly, it's an annually calculated monthly observation of that. Then the same thing here, we don't absolutely need these guys actually here, but this is the thing that we are interested. So we are interested about the 12-month changes in the euro real economic activity. So I also calculate the UK case here, so you can do obviously this exercise also using the UK data. But as an example here, I will only use the euro case. So this is actually the illustrative figure that I presented to you yesterday already. So the main point here is that based on the previous literature, we have a set of variables that might be explaining the real economic activity. So for the further purposes of illustration, I have now here calculated also the lead values. So the future 12-month changes in euro real economic activity. So this is very easy here in RATS. Just put the minus sign there in front of this lack operator here, or the lack value. So minus means that it is now calculating the lead values. If you take the minus away, then it is calculating actually the past values of 12 months past from 12 months in the past history, but now that we are using this minus, it's calculating the lead values. This is very easy here. So for both cases, we might be interested in doing this. And this is the figure one that I actually presented to you yesterday. So we are now taking a very short look at whether it might be relevant to do this kind of analysis at all. Is the future real activity anyway related to these relevant variables in our sort of a conditioning variables, term spread from the euro area, short-term interest rate, and then the excess return. Based on just eyeballing these things, it might actually be the case. The surprising thing here is that you are actually able to detect some kind of time-varying common trends, for example, in the Euro excess return at 12-month horizon with respect to the future values of real economic activity changes. So you have here, and this is actually something that is quite nice to be observed from this data. So you are not doing a nonsense regression in any way if you are regressing these variables against each other. You just have to be careful that you are doing the things more or less the same way that other guys have been doing in the past history. And for example, Stock and Watson paper in the Journal of Economic Literature from 2003 gives you reasons for using these kind of variables in this regression model. Okay, so let's start doing this analysis now. So here we are doing for us first the autocorrelation function calculations. So we are using 12 lacs, and we name the autocorrelations to be AC URD DLY 12 and partial autocorrelations to be named as PAC for the same thing. The method that we are using here is the Yule-Walker method, and then we want to be reporting, we want to report the Q statistics, the Leung-Box Q statistics for this model. And we are now constructing this or calculating these autocorrelations for the lagged values, 12 months lagged changes in the Euro real economic activity. So what are these results implying? How does, actually we discussed about these already yesterday, I won't go through those. We discussed all of those already yesterday, but I will go through this one because it's very easy to actually draw also these graphs in the using the RATS program, because you can get quite nice graphs for bar charts, for example. So you have these autocorrelation, partial autocorrelation functions. I draw these yesterday already. And obviously you can calculate these things for all the other variables, but let's not go through these, but start here the actual today's example. So we are now first trying to identify what is the relevant ARMA model for the Euro real economic activity. And we are using here, actually, now we are skipping this partial autocorrelation and autocorrelation things because it seemed to be the case that it's perhaps not very easy to try to be able to detect the most appropriate representation of the data based on the partial autocorrelation and autocorrelation functions. So basically, we are now here using the so-called BJ autofit, Box-Jenkins autofit procedure. These procedures are named, or these packages are named in a different way in different programs. But for example, here in this WinRATS program, it's named like this. And you have to go, I have here given you the user guide pages actually for what is this actually doing. The main thing that you have to remember here that it's sort of an external procedure. It's not included automatically to all the programs or the all the procedures that are downloaded with the program. So you have to get that from the Estima website. Just go and get that from the Estima website and then download it to the same folder from which you are using this program. So it's easiest to introduce that procedure from that folder. And the same web page where you download the free trial version of the RATS program. So all these procedures that start when you call those in the program, they start with the instruction at sign there. The main thing here is that we want to decide that what is the maximum length in the AR part and what is the maximum length in the MA part. So we are using now monthly data, so perhaps the maximum relevant length could be something like a 12 months length in both parts. You can make a decision regarding the criterion. So information criteria is now here the main thing that we are now using for the purposes of deciding the optimal lac lengths. And you are aiming to try, or you try to find out the lowest possible value. And you can, by definition, or as the standard value, or the standard value for this option, this procedure actually uses the Akaike information. So if you don't write anything here to the CRIT, CRIT option, then it is estimating the models and then using the calculated Akaike information criteria for each and every one of the models. So when you instruct this to be applied to the data on Euro 12-month change in the Euro real economic activity, then it starts to calculate or estimate all the possible combinations of various ARMA models. So there's a huge amount of possible representations. So it takes some time, but not very long. It calculates from each and every trial ARMA model. It calculates the residual statistics. So it calculates the residual sum of squares and uses that for the calculation of the information criteria. And here it simply reports to you the results. So we are using the Bayesian-Schwarz information criteria to try to detect the best possible representation as an ARMA model for the 12-month changes in the Euro real economic activity. So what does this reporting indicate to you? What kind of ARMA model would perhaps be the best possible model? Open up your microphone and just say what could be. You are trying to aim towards, you're trying to get the lowest possible value for these numbers here.
Is it the one with the highest significance?
There are no significances here at all. So all the things here that are being reported in this set of numbers. So here's the AR part. So the maximum length for AR parameters is 12. And the maximum length for MA parameters is also 12, as we instructed here. And it's estimating all these possible models. So it's trying first the ARMA 00, then ARMA 01, then ARMA 02. And it's saving all the residuals from the model and then calculating the Bayesian information criteria. The actual test statistics, the information criteria is reported, not the p-values. And you are aiming towards the smallest possible value for this information criteria. And actually, the program helps you in these regards. It gives you this star sign here, this asterisk sign for the lowest possible value, lowest value that has been calculated from this huge amount of models. So each and every one of these values here is referring to a different ARMA model. You get the residuals from this model. For example, when you estimate an ARMA 1-1 model, you estimate the parameter estimates for the AR part and for the MA part. So you have two parameter estimates for these things. And then the model gets to be saving the residuals. The residuals are saved from that, and the residual sum of squares are calculated. And based on that Schwarz information criteria that I presented in the slides, then we calculate this value. And it gets to be reported at this level. And the lowest value is obtained here. So what does this indicate? What kind of model seems to be the best possible ARMA representation for the 12-month changes in the Euro real economic activity as an ARMA model? What is the model looking like? But obviously, it's a model where the AR part is of length 3 here on this row, and the MA part is of length 11. So how many parameter estimates, if you include a constant to this model, how many parameter estimates are you estimating? How many parameters are you estimating to this model? Three for the AR part and 11 for the MA part plus a constant term. So you're estimating 15 parameters, 15 parameter estimates. It's a huge model. It clearly can be the case actually that mostly the MA parameter estimates might not be statistically significant, or if all of those are actually statistically significant, it might be the case that you might have to include a seasonal component to your model too. So the seasonal moving average, so every 12-month observations of the moving average terms are statistically significant. We will focus on that also. But let's now continue and do the same using the Akaike information criteria. So here in the option grid, we skip the option grid completely. So by default, it is now doing the same calculations, but using the different measure for the goodness of fit of the model. We have to wait for a while because it's estimating a huge amount of ARMA models. So what is the information or what is the message from these results? What kind of model might be the relevant model using the Akaike information criteria?
Is it the AR4 and MA12?
Yeah, exactly. So we get the standard result, the usual result, that usually Akaike information criteria actually results into a larger model. In this case, can you also, Manu, can you tell me what is the number of parameter estimates that you get to be estimating in this case?
Is it 16? Plus the constant term.
Yeah, exactly. 16 actual parameter estimates for the ARMA model and then the constant term if it gets to be statistically significant. So this is once again a huge model. It might be the case that actually there's lots of unnecessary information, especially in the MA part. And for out of sample forecasting purposes, for example, these huge models might prove not to be very good, actually. But this gives you an idea about the absolute maximum of the lag effects that you have to consider in the model. So basically, it's now quite difficult to make a definite conclusion. So based on the Bayesian criteria or the Schwarz criteria, we have an ARMA 311. And based on the Akaike information criteria, we have a ARMA 412. So let's try both. So the next stage is the step two in ARMA modeling. But I have taken a priori closer look at the prominent models, and actually I'm introducing other standard possibilities for the more parsimonious representation of the model. So we will be trying also this kind of model, ARMA 1-1, with the seasonal component in the moving average term. So basically this is going to be a model that you have to estimate with the maximum likelihood estimation procedure, because this is not a linear model in parameters. You are multiplying each and every AR component and MA component with the first lag with the seasonal effect from the MA lag, seasonal MA effect. So let's try these, but let's try also something else. But this actually now, this first stage, this information criteria search gives you absolutely the maximum of length structures that you have to consider. So let's now first estimate this using boxchenk command, and here you can have the results. So they look like this. It's bun. It's made by least squares regression using Gauss-Newton approach. You don't have to pay attention to these things. The main thing here is just you have to get to a situation where the parameters or the optimization algorithm is giving you the convergence. So the parameter estimates that get to be estimated are globally the best possible parameter estimate. So you are now maximizing the possibility actually that you get the right representation for the data using these parameter estimates. It reports you also the number of usable observations, degrees of freedom, which is the number of parameters that are being estimated. So you have 15 parameters, so 222 minus 15 gives you degrees of freedom, 207. Very, very high are squared values. This is the standard finding in all the AR models. So this is very good model in terms of capturing the in-sample behavior of this real economic activity. Here is the first very important thing. The Durbin-Watson statistics is very close to two because we are basically capturing all possible dynamic effects in this regression. And then it is calculating also the Q statistics, Ljungbox Q statistics. And what can you say about the goodness of the model for the part of Ljungbox Q statistics? We get the significance level for that test to be 0.36. So are you able to say that there is no autocorrelation in the estimated residuals of this model? As a researcher, you first have to make obviously a decision about the significance levels or the risk levels of your statistical inference that you are willing to make. Is it 1%, is it 5%, or is it 10% level? But this result actually, even at the 10% levels, enables you to make the conclusion that there is no autocorrelation. If this would be below 0.1, then at 10% level, you would have to accept the counter hypothesis that actually there is autocorrelation in this residual. So this now gives you an idea that this really is a good model actually in terms of the forecast, in terms of the autocorrelation in the residuals. It kind of wipes out all the autocorrelation that is problematic if it leaves autocorrelation to the residuals. That is problematic, but it seems to be a good model. The problem here is that obviously the model might be over-parameterized, and you get an idea that perhaps the seasonal effect of the moving average component might be relevant because all these MA parameter estimates, so you can calculate the first moving average parameter estimates if you have observation one and observation two. So the moving average for that is actually the moving average of these two observations. These don't get to be lowering. The higher you get go into the lag structure, you obviously get almost the same. So they stay over the value of 0.9. So this is actually giving you indication this. It's if you were to use this model, you would be using for your auto sample forecasting performances actually a huge model that might not give you very good forecast still, even though it seems to be a statistically relevant model. What can you say about these AR components? We have three AR components, and which ones or which one of those would seem to be statistically relevant? Significant.
The second and third.
Yeah, second and third. If we make a decision that we want to do all the statistical inference at the 5% risk level, so we would be focusing on the values for the significance of the p-values here at 0.05 level above or below that. So everything that gets 0.05 below 0.05 value for the p-value is statistically significant, and that should be in connection to high t-statistic also. And it seems to be the case that high t-statistics and low p-values are being recorded here in the LAX 2 and 3. So basically, I would be perhaps suggesting that we should skip the AR1 if you want to get towards a more parsimonious model. What about the constant term at 5% significant level? Should we skip that one or include that one?
Included.
Yeah. But if we go to a tighter confidence intervals or tighter inference in terms of the significance at 1% significance level, actually we would be making perhaps a wrong conclusion that the constant term should be excluded. So we would be focusing on the situation where we are not including the constant term. But my suggestion based on these parameter estimates would be that constant, yes, at 5% significance level, it has to be included. AR2 is relevant, AR3 is relevant, but a huge number of MA components might seem to be relevant too. So this raises now a question of whether we have over-identified or overestimated this model. So let's now try the next version that actually includes also the 12-month LAX of the MA term. And in this case, we now run into some problems in terms of the convergence. First of all, in 100 iterations, this model does not converge. It does not give us basically the global maximum. So basically all the inference here now that gets to be very different compared to the previous case. You see here that the significance level now change a lot. First of all, it seems to be the case that the AR1 part here would seem to be relevant. AR2 is relevant, but 3 is not, whereas 4 at 5% significance level is still. But more importantly, we actually now find that if we include the MA12 term, the so-called seasonal effect, 12 months lagged effects from the MA part, all other information before that seems to be actually irrelevant, most of all. So only at lag 11, actually, the MA part here, and at two, actually, the MA part at 5% significance level would seem to be relevant. So basically, I would very much now, based on these results, I would suggest that you have to absolutely try something else. The information criteria is actually implying clearly over-identified model or over-parameterized, not over-identified, but over-parameterized model. So let's try something very simple, actually, but in a nonlinear form, whether we can get to the convergence in this case. By the way, this LAS here already is instructing always that the residual from this model should be saved. And if you want to use the model for forecasting purposes, you always have to save the residuals for later uses. So let's now try something else. Let's try here an ARMA one model with a seasonal effect from the moving average component. Now, what can we have? What do we obtain from here? What can you say about the model in this case? Is it better model?
Is it that Q statistic would imply that there is autocorrelation.
Yeah, exactly. So even though we get convergence, so it, the model converts, you are able to estimate the global values for the parameter estimates. Actually, the Q statistics a bit problematic here. It implies actually there that there is now some kind of autocorrelation still, but you have to remember here that it is doing the autocorrelation analysis for a very long lag structure. So it's testing for 3 years lags in the residuals. So it's a huge number. You can decide, obviously, the number, you can force the testing to be lower. So you would, in that case, probably get into a situation that you don't have the statistically significant residual autocorrelation anymore. So, but what about the individual parameter estimates here? What can you say about those?
The constant term and the MA1 are not statistically significant.
Yeah, exactly. And what might be the problem regarding the AR1 coefficient here? What might be the problem for this? I mentioned this in the lectures earlier today. Regarding the value of this parameter estimate, is it good to have this kind of value? The simple answer is that you should be a bit worried in case you get this kind of coefficient when you have only one lag in the AR part in your model, because this is actually now implying that you might have a unit root in this data generating process for real economic activity. It's very close to one. You can test for the significance whether it is actually one. You will be doing this in the demonstrations, but since the Q statistics here is actually not very nice, you basically should be very critical for this model. And another reason for why you should be critical, even you get some kind of statistical significance here, the seasonal component is very relevant, moving average component is not so relevant, AR component would seem to be relevant, but its coefficient is very close to one. So it's now implying probably that perhaps you should use, if you want to have a stationary ARMA model for this real economic activity, you should actually use a different values for that. And you might get clearly different results. So let's take a look at now for the correlation of the residuals from this last model more closely, because we had this problem here, significance of the Ljungbock's test statistics was a problematic value. So let's now take a closer look for the regarding the correlation behavior, autocorrelation of these residuals. So let's calculate those and report the Ljung statistics at 12 lakhs for these residuals. We still have this problem. So this model actually is in problems. It's in two directions it is in problems. First of all, the first thing is that residuals are not behaving appropriately. They seem to be autocorrelated. Second problem is that the coefficient on the first lag in the AR part is very close to one. If you were to test that, whether it is actually one in statistical terms, you would get the result that it is actually, you can approximate it with a value of one. So that is a big problem, basically. So it's not resulting a very good model, actually. So let's once again try something else. based on the behavior of these residuals, actually, you have a fairly simple model here. You can actually get some further. This is the digging deeper part that I got to be involved heavily already in my PhD. I had to be sure that I'm estimating the best possible ARMA model for the Finnish inflation rate for that 1990s and 1980s data set. So I had to dig deeper very carefully that how are the residuals behaving. So you get some kind of information for the probably relevant representation already from this representation. If you take a look at these residuals from this last model, you still have their partial autocorrelation that is quite high at the LAC 3. So perhaps AR3 could be something that you have to include to the model. And then perhaps also from the MA part, you have to include something. But since you are including AR3, let's include now MA2 also. This is more like a trial and error part of the ARMA modeling. Seasonal component is something that we definitely want to have included because it was found out that we found out that it is relevant. So let's once again try a new model. Let's try to somehow get to a very relevant representation. We try to get to a model that would give us an appropriate level for the Jung box test statistics. What about this guy here? Is it going right? Does the model improve here?
I think it improves because every variable is statistically significant, but the Q statistic is still.
Yeah, this guy here is still, this is very questionable still. All the guys here are statistically significant. All the relevant parameter estimates are here statistically significant. In terms of the problem regarding possible unit roots in the data series, you should now focus on the sum of these coefficients. So 0.78 plus 0.58 minus 0.42. Actually, once again, it is now yielding you a value that is quite close to one. So the message is still the same, that it might be actually not relevant to use this in levels. So let's continue something else. Once again, let's do the correlation analysis or autocorrelation analysis for this model also. Does this help us in any way? Well, partial autocorrelations, they are a bit problematic because they seem to be staying there at a fairly high level up until LAC 4. And autocorrelations also, they keep increasing until LAC 4. So perhaps ARMA 4.4 could be something that we should try. But nevertheless, let's try still something else. This is a good example that you might end up into a very good model if you keep on trying to get the most parsimonious representation. So this model actually gives you an idea that perhaps the fourth lacked AR components and even the fourth lack of MA components should be included. But let's still, I want to stick, based on my past experience with these guys, these models, I want to try something else still. I want to try this kind of model. Oh, I was right. I had the hunch that it's not necessary to include all the AR parts up to the lack of four and not all the MA parts up to the lack of four, but some parts of those. So, Manu, can you now say that this model is appropriate? Could you go on with this one?
Yeah, I think so. All are statistically significant, and the Q statistic also looks pretty good.
Yeah. And actually, we now get a bit lower parameter estimate for the AR1. coefficient, but still it's quite high actually, so we should actually test for the null hypothesis that whether this coefficient is still actually one in statistical terms, but in other all the other terms this actually now results to a fairly good model actually. So let's now take a look at the correlation behavior or autocorrelations from these residuals, and they actually now behave quite nicely, and also these Ljungborg statistics get to be even more clearly perhaps accepted if we are focusing it to perhaps a bit more relevant, at the more relevant lag length of 12 lags, because we have monthly data. So this is a nice model actually. This is fairly small model. It gets to be estimated with the global maximum in the maximum likelihood estimation. So basically convergence is achieved for the parameter estimates, and then basically also the significance level for even 3 years lags in the residual series get to be behaving nicely. So this is clearly above 0.05, and these all these parameter estimates are actually statistically significant. One of the main messages that we get from this, that in these kind of macro variables, these kinds of macroeconomic related variables, it's probably always very important to take care of the seasonal components. And this is something that you have to always remember, that you have to go back and remember what kind of data you are analyzing. Are you analyzing macro data? Real economic activity might have, for example, it might have a seasonal component. Okay, so we ended up using a fairly good model actually. Out of curiosity, let's now try also as an alternative model, an ARMA-1-1. That is always the starting model actually that you should always consider. So we estimate that for the period up until the Lehman Brothers collapse, because after that, both the euro area and the US economic real economic activity suffered quite a lot from the global financial crisis. So try to forecast the forthcoming values after the Lehman Brothers collapse in September, 15th of September in 2008. So we admit that we have now received a very good, we have obtained a very good ARMA representation that seems to be a non-consecutive representation. So it's not necessary to include the first lag of the MA part, but it's absolutely necessary to include the seasonal component, the 12-month effects that have a nonlinear effect on AR and MA parameter estimates always in each and every month also. So let's compare that to the perhaps the most simple representation of this data, to an ARMA-1-1 model. So name the equation as the B Box-Jenkins equation ARMA-1-1 for forecasting purposes. Save the residuals. We have to always save the residuals and estimate that. We are now restricting the estimation period to be from 1997 January until September 2008. Save the residuals as residuals ARMA-1-1 and do one univariate forecast from October 2008 onwards, and use this equation that we have defined here. Print out the forecast values. So here are the forecast values. They should actually start to converge towards the mean value or the estimated constant term actually, the longer they are, because we get to be using only the 1 month length of the memory. So basically the constant term is 1.017. So you get in the long-term forecast actually that these are approaching actually that the longer your forecast horizon would be, the closer to the constant term actually these forecasts would start to develop. And that was the finding that we actually received from our previous discussions also. Compare these actual values to the forecasted values. So print the actual values for the euro activity and then the forecasted values. So you can print those. So you obviously are able to say that at the beginning they might be capturing something, but since we observed that huge change in the real economic activity right from the third month onwards, they are, or the, actually from the second month on onwards, they are going hugely wrong. We are not capturing that structural change by any means in this model, actually. So if you take a look at these actual values and compare to the forecast values, they are, forecast values are really going bad. So let's do now the forecast comparison actually here in actual measures for the forecast performance. So we sample the data that we are focusing on to the outer sample period, so starting from the October 2008 until September 2016, and graph the actual values against the forecasted values from ARMA 1.1. You get the result that it is not, it's not looking actually very nice. And the main reason for having quite poor performance for the near-term forecast for, let's say, the first 4 or 5 years is actually that huge drop in the real economic activity. But as we go towards longer forecast horizons, actually the mean might not be too bad when we compare that to the actual values. Okay, so let's try now something else here. So we have now tried that for the ARMA model. So these are supposed post-crisis, and then start to calculate the forecast performance measures. Calculate first the mean squared error from the ARMA 1.1. So that is just the difference between the actual values and the forecast values. Square those first, and then apply the statistics command. And you don't want to print all the minimum and maximum values and variances and so on, save the mean values as MSE ARMA model mean squared errors from that, and compute now the root mean squared error as the square root of the mean value. So you have saved into a predetermined variable this percentage mean, means that you have saved the mean value there, and calculate the square root of that, and then display the root mean squared multi-step ahead forecast error. So it's here. It's 6.70. Now, usually we want to compare different models. So we already found out that perhaps this ARMA 1.1 model is actually not a very good model. And a better model could be this model that has this AR1 component and MA component at second and third lag, and then the seasonal component. So let's compare that model to the ARMA 1.1 model. So we have to first estimate that best model, do the same exercise in terms of auto-sample forecasting. So we get these results once again, and then do this. But actually now you here see kind of an interesting thing, actually, that the whole sample model, so remember that when we estimated the model for the whole sample, it resulted to be the best model for the whole sample. But actually in a subsample that ends to September 2008, it is actually not the best possible model probably. So ARMA 1.1 can actually be a better model in terms of the statistical significance. You get here actually the result. You have convergence, yeah, that's a good thing here. But for example, the Q statistics is not actually playing. It's not very nice. Actually, it's not at 5% significance level. You actually get to be accepting the hypothesis that there is autocorrelation. AR term is very significant. At 5% level, also MA2 and MA3 are significant. Seasonal component is also significant. So in terms of the individual parameter estimates, this still plays quite well. But it might be in troubles actually in terms of forecasting performance out of sample when the in sample ends to September 2008. So let's do this analysis also. So we have now estimated the model, and so we can do this once again, just box check instruction, the same thing here, and then do the forecasts and then compare the actual forecasts and actual values and the forecasts from this model. So print those out, and it seems to be the case that first of all, the same thing happens here, that it's not very well able to capture the huge drop in the real economic activity in the first months of the global financial crisis, actually. But might it still be, in terms of the forecast performance, might it still be beating the simple ARMA 1-1 model? So let's now first graph these. So they look like this, actually. So they are now actually converging to the zero, the constant term actually from the estimated model actually here. so we that have not included the constant term here actually at all. So it's zero, assumed to be zero in this case. So let's now calculate the mean squared error statistics also for this model. The same thing as we did last for the ARMA 1-1 model, and report those. So what can you say when you compare this value here from that non-consecutive ARMA model with seasonal effects, and compare that to the value that you received here from the ARMA 1-1 model? It was here. So compare those two guys. Which one of the models is the better? Manu, can you say something about it? What is the main idea in terms of the forecast performance?
I'm not sure.
The main idea was to try to get the lowest possible value for the forecast performance measure. So we are using here the root mean squared errors as the forecast performance measure. And we got it from ARMA 1-1 to be 6.71 approximately. And from that non-consecutive ARMA model where we had only first term for the first luck for the AR part and second and third luck for the MA part, and one seasonal component that was connected to the MA seasonal component, we got a bit lower, not hugely, not very much lower, but clearly still lower value for the root mean squared error statistic. So in general terms, it might be the case that actually that model that has been fitted, that was the best possible, by far the best possible model for the overall all whole sample. If you fit that to the sample before the global financial crisis, it's still actually, it is better also to forecast using that model, the out of sample observations during the global financial crisis. But this is actually a good example of the things that you have to always take into account in the actual data. You have to remember that here now we are trying to forecast. So we should be able to, because that's the last thing that we estimated, so we should be able to graph here the last model also for the forecasted period once again. So this is a good example that you always have to come back to the reality. What were the things that happened for this variable that we are inserted? Euro area real economic activity collapsed completely at the beginning of the global financial crisis. So if you are trying to use a model that has been estimated based on ARMA models for the period before that global financial crisis, it should a priori actually not be able to capture very well the behavior of the actual series in the during the global financial crisis. So forecasting performance should a priori actually not be very good. But still, it seems to be that it is quite good compared at least to some other specifications like ARMA 1.1 specification. It actually is performing better. The only way you can do comparisons is always to do some kind of calculation for the forecast performance values. So, for example, use this root mean squared error statistics that you can have. You can calculate always when you have constructed the forecast and then you have the actual values, then you can always calculate these two guys for one model and then for another model. So basically, if you want to use, for example, this naive forecast as the other model, and then, for example, ARMA 1.1, then you would be calculating the root mean squared errors in the naive case just by assuming that the forecasted values are always the same as has been the last observation of the real economic activity that has been used in the estimation of the model. So if you get and then compare your forecasts to those forecasts. So if your forecasts are better than the naive forecasts, then you should be getting the field use statistics to be below one. You are performing better in terms of out-of-sample forecasting. So I have given you these various opportunities for calculating these performance measures, forecast performance measures, and you will be doing these things in the exercises demonstrations this week. Actually, if you want to, I will stop sharing this one. If you want to have a even more or even closer look at the forecast comparison things, then you can obviously have a look at this. I will start sharing this now. This is my paper from the PhD thesis where I did very, very careful analysis of the Finnish inflation series using these ARIMA models. And actually the final version of the model looked like a ARIMA model like this. So I had to take the difference of the inflation series and an ARIMA 1.1 model for the difference series, but controlling for the seasonal component in the monthly data was by far the best model. But even in that model, there were a lot of things that the residual behavior sort of revealed that there are a lot of things that you still have to capture. And I had to introduce a huge amount of structural breaks to this analysis. So I constructed a set of dummy variables that were capturing, for example, additive outliers. AO refers to those. And then changes in the coefficients or the constant term, and then also many kinds of variance changes, for example, in this series. And I had to estimate a much more complicated model than just an ARMA 1.1.1.0.0.1 model, actually, to get better forecasts than did, for example, the ETLA, the Finnish Research Institute for the Finnish Economy, or the Bank of Finland, actually. I was determined to get better forecasts out of sample from my model than these two research institutions. And I was able to do that, actually, finally. But it required a huge amount of work. So I will stop sharing this now. And now we have gone through this example, practical example number four, and basically you should now be able to do all the demonstration exercises for demonstration two, and it's perhaps best that we skip the rest of these slides for this week to so move those to the next week. So we'll start next week from this discussion of these multivariate models for stationary variables and end up to the discussion of VAR models, vector autoregression models, and then continue from that towards the unit root or the non-stationary analysis of non-stationary variables. I know that I have been very fast in during this lecture, so it's good that I have recorded everything here. So go back and try to mirror all the discussions in the lectures to this practical example thing, and then remind yourselves about these things before you go to the demonstration two on Monday, because it's useful for you. And before the demonstration, take a look also at the codes that are being provided to you in Moodle. Okay, thanks. That's pretty much it. So I'll see you next week, and I wish you a very nice weekend.
I have one question, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm exchange student, and I didn't have access to Moodle for a long time, and now when I have access, I can't see the apply like the lectures in the Moodle.
Oh.
I think I have to be enrolled in the course.
Yeah. So have you signed up for the course in Sisu? And have
yes,
you been?
Yes.
And in GOVS also. So basically, if you send in an email, I can add you manually to the Moodle, because
okay.
It has not been transformed automatically from Sisu, obviously. So
okay.
if you just send me an email, I will add you manually to Moodle.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Have a nice day.
Have a nice day. Goodbye. And have a nice weekend. Bye.